This Augusta Golf Show podcast is brought to you by Gerald Jones Audi. Inspire design, where emotion takes shape. 4022 Washington Road in Martinez.
At some point in our lives, we've all done things to fit in. But then we realize the importance of being ourselves. Introducing the distinct Audi Q5, an SUV all its own. Its LED DRLs stand out wherever they shine. And with Audi Quattro all-wheel drive and available Audi Drive Select, it delivers performance that no one can imitate. So be yourself. Visit your Audi dealer to test drive the distinct Audi Q5.
I'm David Jones. Come see the largest selection ever of Audi A3s, Q5s, and Q7s. Audi Exceptional Luxury Performance at Gerald Jones Audi, 4022 Washington Road in Martinez, or visit us on the web at GeraldJonesAudi.com.
Well, John Hopkins is a senior writer at Global Golf Post, and this week's issue contains an in-depth look at two-time Masters champion Seve Ballesteros, who would have been turning 60 years old this weekend. It's a pleasure to welcome John Hopkins back to the Augusta Golf Show. John, thanks for doing this.
This is a pleasure. This is a pleasure.
What was it you wanted to get across about Seve that maybe hadn't been talked about?
Well, I don't know that I had any aim like that. I just wanted to tell people what Seve was like. And almost from the moment I started, I discovered that actually a lot was known about him, but an awful lot more was not known about him, if that makes sense. I mean, everybody knew that he was handsome and dashing and black-haired, and he had wonderful teeth and he film star looks, and he was exquisite around the greens and he hit wild drives, and everybody knew all that. But what I think my story brings out is the extent to which he felt many of those things. And if you talk particularly about things like the Ryder Cup, for example, or the what I call the crusades in his life. And they could have been crusades just to beat his older brothers at something when he was growing up. But the crusades I talked about were the crusade he had to marry Carmen. Carmen's parents were of the view that initially that their daughter was far too good for some farmer's son. So that was crusade number one, convince them that he was good enough. Another crusade was get Spanish golf into America and prove to the Americans that Spaniards can play golf. Another one was get European golfers into America and prove that Europe is good enough to compete with the Americans, and in the most obvious place, the Ryder Cup. So he carried these crusades, they burned inside him, and those are the sort of things I wanted to get through to the reader.
A theme that runs through the article is his temperament. Some calling him difficult to get along with. Was that something about the competition, or in life was he somewhat difficult to get along with?
He was one of those people who, when he met you, would metaphorically look at you out of the corner of his eyes, much as to say, I don't know about you, you've just been introduced to me, but I'm not going to make up my mind until I know either that you're okay or you do something for me that tells me that you're okay. But initially, I'm very careful and cautious. And if you do something wrong, you will be my enemy from this minute onwards, and I will never, ever forget.
You couldn't make that up. You couldn't fix the relationship?
Nope. I think that if Seve took a dislike to you, you'd had it for life, really. And he took... he never felt comfortable in this country for the reasons that... he heard American players talking about him, and they thought he was coming over to plunder the U.S. tour. They thought that he was better. He wasn't as good as he thought he was, and so on. And he didn't like this, and he took against them. As I say, he was looking at everybody out of the corner of the eye, and most of the people over here, and most of the events in this country, he didn't take to.
Did you feel he was underappreciated in this country?
I did. Yes. I mean, I could see that the odd thing is that as a Spaniard, he was underappreciated in Spain. He often said how much he liked playing golf in Britain because there he was appreciated. We really roared for him, and we understood the good things that he did and the bad things. He felt very strongly that the Spaniards didn't. And he often talked about the one time when the mayor of his local town promised to build a driving range, which he would name after Seve. Never happened. And that was just that was just the sort of thing that would get under his skin. You know, you promised me you'd do it. Why haven't you done it? No, politics and so on. So, as I say, the mayor on that occasion was the bad guy, and he was cast off Seve's list of Christmas cards, as so many people were.
We're talking with John Hopkins from Global Golf Post. Did you get a sense that he needed to be loved? He needed to be liked?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the thing that drove him on was feeling that other people didn't either like him or he didn't like them, and therefore he wanted to put one over on them, or other people doubted him. And if any of those things, they were the Crusades. Carmen's parents doubted his ability to be good enough to marry their daughter, so nothing drove him on more fervently. He believed that the Americans felt they were superior at golf. It was his lifetime ambition to prove that the Spaniards were, not every Spaniard, but some Spaniards were as good as Americans, could come over here and play and win tournaments. And it was a lifetime ambition that he would lead. He would play in a winning Ryder Cup team. He would captain a winning Ryder Cup team and really and truly stamp on the throats of those people who either he actually disliked or the people about whom he felt unsure.
Now, he seemed to like this place. He seemed to like Augusta National. Did he like the course more than the tournament? Did he love the tournament?
Well, I think he fell in love with the place because it so appealed. I mean, if you wanted a golf course that was designed for someone with the artistic ability and golfing ability of Seve, you would come up with Augusta National, wouldn't you? In the days when he first came, don't forget, the fairways were wide. There was no what we call a semi-rough or secondary cut. He could, and often did, hit very wild drives, and then he would come into his own with these magical second shots, feathering the ball to drop and stay within 10 feet below the pin on certain holes, and never to be on the left of the 14th green, and so on and so forth. And then on the times when he did miss the green, well, he worked out how to play shots, and he could play them. One of the nicest stories, I think, in my story, was told to me by Tom Lehman, who described the way that he believed that Seve had an ability to, first of all, think of a shot and then play it. And the way he described it to me was, he said, you've seen that film, Mozart. In it, Mozart is ill, and he's dictating a piece of music to Salieri, the court composer. No mean musician himself, but not in Mozart's class. And Salieri, as he's jotting down these quavers and crotchets and so on, he's saying, I don't get this. I don't understand this. What are you telling me, Mozart? I don't, you know, what is all this? And Lehman was saying, that's the thing. Most of the golfers could be out there facing a shot that Seve was facing, and Seve would have one way of doing it, and the others would be saying, I don't get this. How are you doing this? And not only have you thought it up, but we know that you're going to be able to bring it off as well.
Because he saw shots the way he saw shots, and they looked natural to him, did he get a sense of how special he was because he could pull them off?
I think he did. Yes, I don't think there's any doubt. He loved that. He did have a justifiably high reputation of his ability, especially around the greens and in bunkers. I mean, one of the players I quote in the story is Tony Johnston, who's considered to be one of the best bunker players on the European Tour. And the high point of his life was when he was at a tournament on the continent. Early in Seve's career, he would be a little bit younger than Seve, and Seve walks past, he's, hey, Zimbabwe, because that's where Tony came from. You're good in sand, eh? We see. And challenges Tony to go into a bunk, and they took an hour, and they were going at it and going at it, and they were never more than one player, one of them was never more than one ahead, i.e., you got your point, as it were, by holding out. If you didn't hold out, it didn't count. Tony's last bunker shot, he holds it. Oh, great, I've got him, I've got the great Seve. Seve gets out of the bunker, patrols the green, looks up and down like this, and almost does everything as if it's for the Masters. It's just, this is just a pick-up competition in the bunker and the practice run. Anyway, does all this, patrols around, goes in the bunker, and of course, you know what happens, holds his shot. Ah, Zimbabwe, you're no so good.
Do you... Did you get a sense that at the end of his life he knew how appreciated he was?
I did. And I think certainly in those horrible 3 years after he was diagnosed with his tumor, I mean, he was a very sad figure, living in this house in Spain by himself and with two elderly people looking after him. And Ken Brown went down there and Peter Alice went down there. But yes, I think he did appreciate, the outpouring of sympathies from people like Paul Azinger, with whom he had clashed famously. Everybody around the world wanted to know how Seve was, is he getting better, and so on. He himself talked about this period from when he was diagnosed in 2008 to what turned out to be the end as the longest past six of his life.
He is John Hopkins. Again, the article is in this week's edition of Global Golf Post. Seve Ballesteros would have been 60 years old this weekend, two-time Masters champion. John, thank you for taking the time to do this. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.